Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sports book on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
It's Mike Shope.
Hey, put a little... I never get this line out the first time. It's not even good. Hey, put a little bit more in there, cowboy.
And the bulldog.
What's your degree in?
Kicking ass and taking names.
On WGR Sports Radio 550.
I've been around, but one thing I've never done is taken my shoes and socks off while playing in a Major League Baseball game, like Jose Altuve. That is something I have yet to achieve. I want to tell you about this later. I did have the honor, at least that's how I'm looking at it, contributing a recipe to a local cookbook for charity. And I was so excited to do that. I was so flattered to be asked. And it took me like a month right to the deadline to decide which recipe, like what I wanted to contribute. Like I was just grinding at that last night. What am I going to go with? But yeah, I'll tell you more about that later. I'm excited about it. Also excited to have Ryan Green join me on the West Her Hotline, 92.5 in Jacksonville, Hacker After Dark. Ryan, I've known Mike Dempsey a long time, but I don't think you and I have spoken before. Where does the nickname come from?
Yeah, Mike, good to be with you. In fact, I started 22 years ago as Mike Dempsey's intern, believe it or not. And my first day at work back in, I think it was 2002, if memory serves, how dressed up in nice golf attire, looked the part. And Mike goes, man, you're really dressed up for a sports radio intern. I said, yeah, I just want to look nice. He said, you any good at golf? I said, nope, I'm terrible. He said, we're going to call you Hacker. And 22 years later, here we are.
Wow, I never knew there would be such a close connection with Mike, but that's a great story. Did you ever want to fight that, or just you went with it?
I just kind of went with it, and now other than my wife, although when she's mad at me, I get it every once in a while, and my mother, I'm Hacker to everybody else, and it's to the point now where my five-year-old son is referred as Little Hacker on our radio station.
Yes, I see that in the bio. Very good. Well, of course, it's the Bills and Jaguars on Monday night, week three. What are the vibes with Jacksonville? I'm guessing, I mean, at least there's frustration, obviously, so far. The tough loss in Miami and maybe almost an equally tough loss to Cleveland. Trevor Lawrence, Doug Peterson sounded pretty negative after Sunday's game. How do you see it?
Mike, the offense has been terrible. I mean, let's just call it what it is. They were good in the first two quarters in week one against Miami. The last six quarters have been ineptitude. I mean, it's been ridiculous. Christian Kirk had one catch for -1 yards last week. Brian Thomas Jr. is their only bright spot. He was on the field 44 times against Cleveland. They only threw it to him four of those 44. They can't run the ball. Travis Etienne had that devastating fumble in week one that cost them the game. The way it's being looked at down here is pretty simple. The defense has been very good, holding Miami to 20, holding Cleveland to one touchdown. They've lost the game because of their offense. Now, the one caveat to that is I don't think they can play much worse on offense. And it took a 52-yard field goal at the gun for Miami to win in week one. And Jacksonville was at the Cleveland 33 and had a ball into the end zone as time expired. So they were in both games with their offense looking absolutely horrifying. So if there is any silver lining, I guess perhaps that's it going into Buffalo here in week three.
I get it. So Trevor Lawrence, I mean, of course, I don't have to tell you any of this, but former number one overall pick, got the bag, you know, in the offseason. Doug Peterson, Super Bowl winner. Like, these two seem to have the pedigree to be able to get this done here, but it's not going well. Where do fans most of the time, Ryan, point the finger?
Everybody's getting a finger pointed at him this week. I think Trent Baalke, the general manager, is getting more of it than anybody else because, look, I thought Baalke did a good job this offseason, but the one thing that we all talked about here in Jacksonville, Mike, was the offensive line. And when your big acquisition is Mitch Morse, who's obviously coming back to Buffalo on Monday night, nothing against him, but that's a 32-year-old center, is your big acquisition to a position group that was horrific last year in the Jaguar offensive line. Trevor got killed last year because they couldn't block anybody. And you don't really add anybody. You bring in Mitch Morse, all right, that's great, but that offensive line still is not very good. And last week against Cleveland, the Jaguars lost that game in large part because the offensive line couldn't block the ground's front four. And really against Miami in the fourth quarter, Jalen Phillips had his way with the Jaguar offensive line. So I think Baalke, the GM's getting a lot of the grief. Trevor's getting some. I mean, obviously, like you said, he got paid a lot of money. I don't feel they've lost these first two games because of Trevor Lawrence. Has he been great? No, but he's been serviceable. And I think it really boils down to play calling, and it boils down to issues along the offensive line.
And then that leaves Peterson and Press Taylor, I suppose. I've read a lot of criticism of Taylor, not so much this year, but more last year. And, you know, Peterson, again, he has the ring. Is he kind of immune then, the way you're describing it, where we're talking about the roster build and the quarterback and how it started? I would think for an offensive-minded coach who's been there for as long that he has, that I don't know if he's in trouble, but there would definitely be criticism.
There is definitely criticism, Mike. I think he will be in trouble if things start, you know, snowballing. Look, Shad Khan, the owner, was very clear this offseason. In fact, he said it twice, and even the second time he said it, he told the team, I was not misquoted in the team meeting at the beginning of training camp. His expectation is to win. When you give this offseason Trevor Lawrence, Joshua Hines-Allen, Tyson Campbell, Foye Oluokun, all these contract extensions, you've spent a lot of money in free agency on Eric Armstead, Mitch Morse, Darnell Savage, Gabe Davis, obviously. The owner's expectation is winning. And coming out of the gate and scoring, you know, averaging 15 points the first two games is not what anybody had in mind. So, I do think if Doug Peterson doesn't start winning games, if they miss the playoffs, there will be a conversation about him at the end of the year. I think a lot of people here in Jacksonville are hopeful they will turn it around. But I said this, Mike, after the Cleveland game, I have zero expectations now for the Jaguars after these first two games and how bad the offenses look, knowing they got to go to Buffalo on Monday night, and then 6 days later they have to go to Houston. I mean, they are absolutely staring 0-4 in the face, and if that's the case, then who knows how bad this could really get here.
Yeah, the schedule does seem to get lighter after that. I mean, that's not saying a lot with the opponents you have coming up. But still plenty of time for the Jaguars to, if you will, save their season. Ryan Green, 92.5, 1010XL, Hacker After Dark, joining me on the West Her Hotline. This is Mike Shope. Bulldog is off today. I want to just sort of zoom out for a minute, Ryan. One thing I've been talking about a lot this week is how the Bills, and I suppose the Jaguars, are examples of teams like you're seeing all over the league where they just can't get the ball down the field anymore. And to see Josh Allen throw for 139 yards in a game and not even run, by the way, is just really almost incredible. Lawrence's completion percentage is not good, but he's also under 200 yards a game. You know, you mentioned Davis, who's got six catches and no one on the team has more through two games. Again, somewhat similar to what's happened with the Bills, although the Bills are 2-0. Do you have any sort of take on what's going on in this league? I mean, we've got the too high safety conversation going all the time, but, you know, teams are turning to the run.
They are turning to the run, but I think, Mike, it goes back to the Jaguar offensive line issues. I don't think the coordinator or maybe even the head coach trust the line enough to have Trevor drop back and not get it out of his hands pretty quick. I mean, the Jaguars are doing a lot of wide receiver screens. They're doing a lot of slants, things along those lines. I do think that will start changing this week, though. Doug Peterson was very frustrated on Sunday after the Cleveland game. I don't know if you saw Trevor Lawrence's comments after Cleveland.
Yeah.
Trevor was the most agitated, the most angered that I've seen him in his time here in Jacksonville. I mean, he was ticked. And he was ticked at himself. He put blame on himself. But he said, people got to take a long look in the mirror. He was actually quoted as saying, we suck right now.
Yeah.
Which was, again, as animated as I've seen Trevor Lawrence. So I'm going to be very interested what the offensive game plan looks like. The bottom line is they got to get the rookie more involved. When they throw the ball to Brian Thomas Jr., good things happen. Brian Thomas Jr. did not touch the ball until the end of the third quarter last week, and that was a 66-yard reception downfield, which is their longest play of the year. So I think absolutely you're going to see more things for Brian Thomas Jr. in this offense as we move forward.
Yeah, you know, this also reminds me of Bill's talk through the summer at wide receiver. There's been big change here. Davis, of course, having left, being a part of that. And what I was hearing about the Jags was, and maybe this is what you should expect, like the rookie has to earn his time. And so Kirk and Davis, but then week one, and Thomas looked like a star in that game. So I wonder if the pecking order hasn't already moved in this way. You're kind of saying that it has. It's like, is Thomas the guy? Is the bottom line here, Ryan, like the Thomas is the one that the Jaguars really need to turn to here to help get this going?
If he isn't yet, Mike, he will be in a very short amount of time. I think he probably is, though, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
The Christian Kirk thing is weird. He's just done nothing in two games. Now, he had a couple of drops against Miami, but they just couldn't get him the ball. They didn't really even try to get him the ball. Last week against Cleveland, Thomas and Kirk had 7 combined targets. Targets, not catches, just targets. That's nonsense. I mean, that's ridiculous. That's why Press Taylor, the offensive coordinator, and Doug Peterson, the head coach, are getting some grief down here for the play calling. Now, some of that's Evan Engram being out. Evan Engram was out with a hamstring last week. We don't know his availability for Monday night, although with a hamstring, it's probably not good. But Evan Ingram's backup, Brenton Strange, played well last week. 3 grabs for, I believe, 65 yards. So the tight end wasn't the issue. I mean, they were using the tight end like they do normally. They just were not throwing the ball to Christian Kirk, Brian Thomas, which was a head-scratcher. That has to change, and I believe it will change Monday. I expect Kirk and Thomas to be a big, big part of what Jacksonville tries to do up there in Buffalo.
Ryan Green, my guest, Mike Shope here on WGR. What are your thoughts on Davis so far? I mean, within the confines of an offense that has just not gotten up to speed yet, you know, he's produced a little bit here. 5 first downs on 6 catches, which is, I mean, that's kind of a part of what Davis's brand is here. It was just kind of the boom or bust nature of his production over the years with the Bills. Is he somebody you're excited about?
Yeah, absolutely. Gabe had a really good training camp. And keep in mind, you know, he's excited to be in Jacksonville, back where he played his college football about 90 minutes down the road there in Orlando at UCF. His parents were at the game last week here in Jacksonville. His mother grew up a Jaguar fan. Gabe Davis is very excited to be a Jaguar, which I think matters. And he's been their best receiver, the most consistent receiver so far. Now, at the very end of last week's game against Cleveland, when Jacksonville was scrambling there under a minute to go, he jammed his shoulder into the ground, came off the field, didn't come back. Doug Peterson did say on Monday that Gabe should be fine. The Jaguars actually are off today. They're back on the practice field tomorrow, so we'll start seeing some injury reports come out. But I expect Gabe to be fine and be able to go on Monday as he returns to Buffalo. But, yeah, I like what Gabe Davis has brought here. But again, they're targeting him way more than they're targeting Christian Kirk and Brian Thomas Jr. And I do expect that to change. He will still get targets, but you got to spread the wealth a little bit if you're the Jaguars.
If you don't mind on Thomas, going back to him for a minute. So here in Buffalo going into the draft, we spent tons of time on these receivers, right? I mean, the Bills kind of obviously would have been looking in that direction. We've thought that other times too, when they didn't end up there, but this year that was the top idea. They end up trading down and getting to Keon Coleman, who ends up at the first pick of the second round being the 8th receiver drafted. Thomas went before the Bills' original pick. There was some talk about him. Ryan, I was worried about Thomas and A.D. Mitchell coming out of this draft, because the data on their yards per route run in college were just really terrible. And it's sort of ironic because they look amazing as players. You know, like on film, Brian Thomas looked incredible, but the numbers worried me. What did you feel about the idea? How did you feel about the idea of drafting him?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. You know, people were upset here about losing Calvin Ridley in free agency. And the reason Brian Thomas Jr. is here, Mike, is because they lost Calvin Ridley in free agency. Brian Thomas had a slow start to training camp, emerged a little bit as training camp went on, did a couple of nice things in the preseason, but there were still a lot of questions about him. I mean, he's played eight quarters in the NFL, so the story is really yet to be written, but you can see it, man. The touchdown against Miami in week one, talking smack to Jalen Ramsey, which the people here in Jacksonville love. The 66-yard catch last week against Cleveland, they just got to throw him the ball more. I am very high on Brian Thomas Jr. I'm trying not to get too high, have my expectations too high for a rookie entering his third game, but I'll be very interested. National TV, Monday Night Football, a rookie in Brian Thomas, what he could potentially do moving forward. But I know the fan base is super, super high on this guy out of LSU.
Of course, last year the Bills and Jaguars met in London, and that was a disastrous day for the Bills with injuries, and then Travis Etienne ends up kind of running all over him in that game, icing the game with a late score. What about Etienne right now? He has scored in each of these first two games. First game, I play a lot of fantasy, like Mike, not as much as Mike, as anybody, but Bigsby was kind of a story in week one, like, oh, maybe this guy is going to be relevant. I've heard Peterson talk about wanting to sort of pace themselves with Etienne as opposed to other years where they might have worn him out. So that made sense. But then was Bigsby not injured last week?
Bigsby got injured on a kickoff return, but it was one of the weird things. I very rarely see this. He was listed as doubtful to come back into the game, and he came back into the game. I can't remember a guy being listed as doubtful to return, and then he comes back in late in the fourth quarter. So again, when the Jaguars get on the field tomorrow, we should know more, but I expect Tank Bigsby to go. But ETN's been good. He just had, let's be honest, a devastating fumble. They lost that game against Miami in week one because Travis fumbled the football. But as you said, a touchdown in week one, a touchdown last week. He's doing well despite the fact that the offensive line isn't very good in run blocking either. And ETN's certainly looking at this opportunity on Monday against a team he had success last year in Buffalo to maybe get going. And it's interesting to talk down here. I'll be quick on this. Last year, you could argue the Jaguar season ended on Monday Night Football. They played Cincinnati and Jake Browning. I'm sure you remember the game where Jake Browning came in and just tore Jacksonville apart on Monday Night Football. Christian Kirk got hurt. Trevor Lawrence got hurt. That was that video of him. Right. Hobbling to the locker room. Their season ended last year on Monday Night Football. Could their season potentially begin this year on Monday Night Football if they go up there and knock off Buffalo, which would be a big upset, obviously? There's at least some talk about that here, the way people are looking at it in a positive spin. So we'll see, but certainly ETN would have to be a big, big part of that if they're going to do that next Monday night.
Yeah, they could not stop the Bengals. It was shocking in that game. Jacksonville, I'm looking at it now, went in 8-3. And we're at home to a Bengals team without Burrow, and they lose that game in overtime. And what is it, 7 out of 8 since, or including that game? They've lost 7 out of 8?
Yeah, they've lost 7 out of 8, and Trevor wasn't even the starter for the one that they won. C.J. Beathard beat Carolina last year when Trevor missed that game injured. So right. Trevor hasn't won a game since a Sunday after Thanksgiving last year.
You know, the Bills and Jaguars have an interesting history. The Jaguars represent really mostly an annoyance to the Bills over the years. Two playoff losses, that Urban Meyer year that the Bills went to Jacksonville and lost 9-6, very strange, and then this game in London last year. I mean, there have been a lot of other meetings. I think the Bills might even have a winning record, regular season at least, against Jacksonville, but there have been some kind of memorable losses here.
Yeah, I mean, look, the playoff game, 10-3, you mentioned London, you mentioned Urban Meyer, and Jacksonville knows that. The talk down here this week is Jacksonville's got to go to Orchard Park for the first time in a while. Bills Mafia will be ready for them. Jacksonville's gotten the benefit of the doubt, playing them in London, playing them in Jacksonville. Jacksonville's back's against the wall. They're a touchdown underdog. No one's going to pick them to win. So from on paper, Buffalo's going to win the game. I'm picking Buffalo to win the game, I'll be honest with you. But Jacksonville is playing up the underdog role, them against the world, going out in Buffalo on Monday night. We'll see what happens. But based on the way last week went, they just could not block the Cleveland front four. And knowing that Russo and Ed Oliver and Von Miller are waiting for them up in Buffalo next Monday night, unless things change pretty drastically, I don't know how Jacksonville's going to block the Buffalo front four, to be honest with you.
Ryan, last thing, what do you think of Houston and that division so far? I mean, Tennessee and Indianapolis are also 0-2 like the Jaguars, and, I mean, at least difficult starts for those teams. Houston isn't dominating, but they have they're a well-liked team going in, you know, to the season, betting markets and such, and they have the two wins. Are they a team for you that you expect to pull away, or is it likely to be more even than that?
Yeah, I haven't been impressed with Houston, even though, like you said, they're 2-0. They beat Indy 29-27, and they beat Chicago, kind of survived Chicago 19-13. Yeah. Jacksonville's going to see Houston a week from Sunday, 6 days after they play Buffalo, which is certainly a tough six-day stretch for the Jaguars. I mean, Houston's clearly the favorite in the South, but I don't think that's saying a whole lot because Indy, Tennessee, and Jacksonville haven't looked very good. Jacksonville, though, has talent. There's no doubt they have talent. Like I said, Mike, they could not have played any worse on offense the first two games. They were awful in the first two games, and they still had an opportunity to win both. If they get functional offense moving forward with the way their defense is playing, they're going to, again, have a chance to win every game, but they got to start winning. I mean, you can't start 0-3 or 0-4 and expect to do very much. So it is a big, big stretch here over the next week and a half for the Jags. They got to get at least one of at Buffalo and at Houston. And then after that, it's Indy, New England, Chicago, and maybe they can make up some ground at that point.
Right. Makes sense. Thank you, Ryan. Ryan Green, Hacker After Dark, 1010XL in Jacksonville. Thanks for your time and best to Mr. Dempsey.
Explaining football to the friend who's just there for the nachos? Hard. Tailgating from home like a pro with snacks and drinks everyone will love? An easy win. And with Instacart helping deliver the snack time MVPs to your door, you're ready for the game in as fast as 30 minutes. So you never miss a play or lose your seat on the couch or have to go head-to-head for the last chicken wing. Shop game day faves on Instacart and enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first three grocery orders. Offer valid for a limited time. Other fees and terms apply.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy daybeds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
Hey, pal, anytime. Take care.
Thank you. You too. Ryan Green at Ryan Green 1010XL. There's that Doug Flutie game with the Jaguars, Jaguars-Bills. He's talking about the records. So I mentioned this yesterday. Like you may have noticed, Baltimore at 0-2. They're at Dallas on Sunday. The Bills go to Baltimore for Sunday night football in week four. And, I mean, there's a coin flip chance that the Ravens go into that game 0-3 at home, and then the Bills go to Houston the following week. So, great start, and you're going to want this game. But then, tougher tests, although maybe not in terms of the Ravens, as daunting as it looked before the season started. Going to take a break here for the update. The Sabres were on the ice for the first time, the whole team, as training camp opened, and it started ominously as Rasmus Dahlin left with some kind of an injury that, I don't know, listening to Lindy Ruff, didn't exactly sound like nothing. At least you have to hope it's not super bad, but we'll see what Paul Hamilton knows about it and whatever else happened at the first day at camp today after the update. Sal will join me in 40 minutes as we get caught up on the Bills and their injuries and this matchup with the Jaguars. Mike Shope here. Bulldog is out sick today. This is WGR.
It's Paul Hamilton.
Oh, Cervantes and Hamilton go at each other and the whiskey. Ooh. Right into it.
We have a fight.
With Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
Knocheck was just totaled by an Iowa State player against the board.
I think it was by Hamilton.
On WGR.
Really a pretty unnecessary hit by Hamilton. Hamilton is still awfully mad. He's being held back.
Number 17, Paul Hamilton.
2 minutes for charging, 5 minutes for fighting, and a misconduct.
Sports Radio 550.
Paul Hamilton's appearances on WGR are brought to you by Equitable Advisors. Planning for your future is about more than just money. Let Equitable be your guide, and by Relax Honda. Relax, we got this. I mean, you hear all about what Paul is about from these clips. I mean, he's in a brawl. I don't know. I've known Paul a long time. It's never really quite made sense to me. But, you know, we all lose our temper from time to time. And that apparently happened to Paul in that long ago hockey game at Iowa State. So, Paul, first day of camp, and Darlene leaves early. I feel like that's probably where we should start.
Yeah, Luukkonen and Levi were the first on the ice, but Darlene was the first skater on the ice, which didn't surprise me in the least. Didn't last long. I didn't see it happen because I was on the air with Joe DiBiase, but he didn't last long. I know I was writing down lines. I'm thinking, Power's out there by himself. Am I missing Rasmus here? And I didn't see him, and he had left. So, as Lindy said, he doesn't think it's anything serious. He went to make a pass, and he goes, quote, something happened. That's all he would say. He called it a mid-injury. I know this will make you crazy.
Mid-body?
Upper body or lower body. It's mid-body injury. But we couldn't give anything more than that. So that's all we got. And he was getting it checked out. So we'll see where that goes.
Yeah, not great. I mean, what would be the significance to you if Darlene, you know, he's a great player who's been in the league a long time, were to miss, you know, whatever it is, like before the time before the opener, like how far would that, just to put something out there, not knowing what we're looking at here, but how far would that set him back?
Well, it would drive him insane because he's the guy who you want intensity in practice. There's your man. And he gets on people in practice. And the thing about him is if he doesn't see somebody doing a drill right, he gets in their face, and then he goes and does the drill himself right in front of them. You know, that's kind of the way he operates. It's like, all right, if you can't do it, I'll show you, I'll do it type of a thing. And I'm sure he's in great shape. He's a guy that keeps himself in good condition and stuff. But, you know, and if it is something that would miss time, then you're down to either Bryson or Dennis Gilbert would be the next guys up. One of the two of them would wind up in the lineup.
So, talking about the intensity of practice, you've been critical at times, other times through the years, of the Sabres maybe lacking a certain level of intensity at practice as authored by their head coach. You know, Lindy Ruff does not have that reputation for you know, easy practices. And from what I've read from you today, you got what you expected in this area.
Yeah, and he said he got what he expected. He was very pleased with what he got and with what he saw. But it has driven me insane since I have watched this team. You're in practice. The team goes offside, but that's okay. But it's not okay in a game. So why is it okay to, when you're doing drills, to go offside? And Lindy Ruff stopped it immediately. And they had to you know, sprint back into the zone and do it again. He hates... This is, I know this before, but he reiterated it again. He hates stupid penalties. Lazy, stupid penalties. He can't stand them. He sees one in practice, it gets blown dead. Because he feels if you're going to do it in practice, then you're going to do it in a game. So those are the types of things. There was a lot of intensity. There was a lot of speed. There was a lot of competing. And that was right off the bat. So... But he did compliment them afterwards. He said he got exactly what he wanted out of the first practice, and he was proud of them for the way they went out there and performed.
Sounds like, you know, Ruff's, again, reputation is well established in the league, and how you've talked about this in this area and the Sabres in the past. And listening to Alex Tuch and Tage Thompson even today, seems like everybody was prepared for this, right? Like players would not have been surprised, like you weren't, that Ruff was going to come in and, you know, kind of be the heavy.
Yeah, that's what they've said all along that they wanted. They knew Don Granato was gone by the time we talked to him at locker cleanout, and they said they wanted, you know, better practices. They wanted more intense practices. They thought practices at times were too easy, and they maybe weren't mentally into it. And to give you an idea, I thought Granado's practices were night and day from Kruger's practices. Kruger's practices were like a country club. And then, you know, all of a sudden, Granado shows up and his team's not in shape. And he sacrificed about the first week and a half, 2 weeks of the season that he was the coach, just putting them through the ringer in practice to try to get them in shape. And it's a, you know, you thought, well, this is much better than Kruger, but Kruger wasn't much. And now the players didn't think that was good enough. They wanted, or at least it slipped. And they wanted better practices, and they're going to get that with Ruff. They want accountability. And I asked Thompson today, I go, look, it, you know, you talk about accountability. And I said, you guys are really good friends, and that's great. I mean, you guys hang out together. You go on vacations together. But are you confident that you're going to be okay getting up in the locker room and getting in somebody's face who's one of your best friends and still be best friends when you walk out of that locker room? And he said, absolutely. He said, if we don't do it, we're not going to be winners. He goes, that's what winners do. He goes, they know it's not personal. They know that you're saying something to make them better. And if somebody's saying something to you, they're doing it to make you better. And it's not personal at all. And when it's over and the practice is over, you can, you know, go hang out again and play video games or whatever it is they do. So we'll see how that goes. And day one was fine. We'll see how day two goes.
I mentioned Thompson and Tuck having spoken. What did you get from them that was interesting to you or any other player?
Thompson, and I don't think he was wrong. He just said, you know, yeah, he went through a lot last year, but he said, you know, he has to be better. He has to be. If this team's going to be successful, he feels he has to be better. And in many different areas of the game, and he thought maybe there were times his effort wasn't good enough. And you know, he talked about that, and he said he set a standard for himself a couple of years ago, and last year he felt he didn't even come close to it. He said his compete needs to be better. You know, the other parts of his games needs to be better. And you know, he kind of taking ownership for what went on last year when he dropped from 47 goals to 21 goals. Now, injuries, yeah, they had a part of it. Yeah, he came back a little bit early with a hand injury and couldn't shoot the puck the way he was supposed to. But still, there were times, you know, he said, for example, being around the net. He said for whatever reason, he felt he got some bad habits and was on the perimeter too much. And feels if he's going to score goals again, he needs to be around that net and not be on the perimeter, depending on that bullet shot of his, which is a great shot and does score some goals. But, you know, he feels it can't just be that. He talked about the power play, where he had over 20 power play goals 2 years ago. That didn't happen last year. For the most part, if you remember a couple years ago, they were in the top three in the league for a lot of the year. They finished up eighth because at the end of the year their power play slumped. But he says it's working hard. It's winning battles and working hard. And he goes, we'll be a much better team because if we can get the power play back to where it was 2 years ago, he goes, it's the same players. So he goes, why can't we? And he goes, but he goes, it's going to take work. He goes, you got to win the battles. He goes, you can't be outworked by the penalty kill. He goes, the penalty kill is usually the four hardest workers on the other team because they're the ones that do the penalty killing. And he goes, you get outworked, you're not going to be successful in the power play. So he felt that right there. If they can start scoring goals in the power play again, how many more points can they have towards getting themselves into the playoffs?
How were you with penalty killing? We've never asked this when you were playing. Were you on the PK?
Killer.
You were?
Yes.
So power play too?
I actually scored a lot of shorthanded goals because of my speed. I could get going and get behind the defense, and if I was behind the defense, they weren't catching me.
Love it.
I was able to actually score quite a few goals shorthanded.
Yesterday,
I wasn't on the power play much.
Okay, that's good, though. Yesterday, we were talking about Jiří Kulík off of the Prospects Challenge and the whole point again about is there a spot for him and does it have to be in the top six? And if it does, is there a spot for him? So it sounded like Benson was the one. If there is that one position next to Cousins and Quinn, was it Benson today?
Mm-hmm. It was. And that's kind of what I had when I put lines together over the summer. If they weren't going to make a trade or if it wasn't a Kulík or somebody like that, that Benson would probably get the first chance at it. He did. But that's the spot right there. I mean, if Kulik has a great training camp and has a great preseason and forces himself in the lineup like Benson did, and Adams reiterated that again. He goes, you know, when given the opportunity, if somebody presses hard and makes them put them in the lineup, he goes, that's when they get put in the lineup. And then you just figure it out. I was a little surprised Malenstein wasn't in the top 12. He was the extra guy. And I was more than a little surprised that it was McLeod on the energy line with Aubé, Kubel, and Lafferty, and not Krebs. Krebs was with Greenway and Zucker.
Still some names here, Paul, that people are going, are they real people? Is this Paul playing? Is this a bit? But we're not used to these guys yet, and it's still summer, but we're going to get there. So is there practice tomorrow? I would assume yes. And will there be any update on Darlene tomorrow necessarily?
We'll ask whether Lindy will tell. Lindy's more stingy on the injury thing than most coaches are. So get ready. I know that's your favorite part of sports is the injury and how they are – you know, upper body,
secretive.
Lower body, and secretive, and the whole thing. Because Lindy probably is worse than any of them are at that. So, but of course, we'll ask. Maybe Rasmus will be back on the ice. Who knows? But don't forget, they only have three practices in this training camp. And that's it. You practice Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. You play a game on Saturday and Monday, and you leave for Germany on Tuesday. So, training camp is 3 days.
I'm not sitting here demanding specifics on this injury, but what we'll probably get next, if he's not on the ice, is whether this is going to be day-to-day, week-to-week, or month-to-month. That'll be, you know, it won't be specific unless you disagree with this. That a general timeline for expectations will be the next, you know, news.
Yeah. And, you know, and Lindy's rather cagey with his goaltenders, too. Now, when you had Dominic Hasek, and you're trying to figure out, is it Dominic Hasek or Rolison, on the odd game that Rolison or Marty was going to go in, all right, I get it. They're totally different goaltenders, and the other team has to come to prepare totally different. Yeah, Luukkonen and Levi are different goaltenders, but I don't think the other team really cares one way or the other, you know, when it comes to that. I asked him about that, if Luukkonen's going to play. He played 54 games last year, and if he's going to do that again or approach 60, don't you got to get Levi to Rochester or someplace where he's going to be playing? And, you know, he kind of answered it. He talked about how you have to have two goaltenders and in this day and age of hockey. And he did in Jersey, but he didn't have the guy he could really ride in New Jersey. And well, after he left Buffalo with Hasek and Miller, he had Kari Lehtinen in Dallas, where he rode him 59-59 in 62 games. But if that's what Luukkonen gets up to, you can't have Levi here. He's got to play. He's 22 years old. He's got to play. So they really don't know what they're going to do yet, other than he said in this day and age, you got to have two goaltenders. But I think, too, if one goaltender gets hot and gets rolling, Lindy Ruff's going to ride him.
And they'll probably each play one of the games in Europe, no matter, you know, whether it's Levi, I guess, or
yeah.
Reimer, but
and you'll have three goalies there in Europe because you can take 27 players. Your roster still needs to be 23, and you got to have a third goalie there because what if you play the first game and he gets hurt? You don't have time to get the other goalie there, so you know, all three of them will be there. He got asked if we might have three goalies during the season, and then he reiterated how that's not ideal. He didn't close the door on it. He goes, I suppose it's possible. He can't. It does not work. He can't. It was shown last year. It doesn't work. Make a decision. And once you get back from Europe, you make a decision, as far as I'm concerned. You cannot fill one of the roster spots with three goaltenders. You just can't.
Bisons tonight, Paul. Did you stay 11 innings last night? Did you stay to the end?
I stayed until Wilkes-Barre had the big 12th inning where they scored six runs, was it? Yeah, they turned a 4-4 game into a 10-4 game. So I actually saw the last home run. I was actually walking to my car.
Yes.
I could see one of the Bisons through the fence move, and then I looked up, and I saw the ball. That's all I saw was the ball headed towards the scoreboard, and then I could see it land on the grass. So it was kind of a weird angle to see a home run.
Mm-hmm.
The Bisons got one in the bottom of the 12th, and they lost 10-5. So they get the rematch. It was interesting because, as you know, I'm a Yankee fan, and
Really?
I don't root for Scranton Wilkes-Barre, but Ben Rice, of course, was with the Yankees quite a bit this year, and his first at bat, he hit a bomb out of here. So it was interesting to see a guy that I've seen quite a bit this year.
You might have cracked a smile. We won't discuss it. Thank you, Paul. Enjoy tonight.
Thank you. Take care.
Paul Hamilton on the Western Hotline, the Bisons game coming up downtown. I've never really thought about that, I guess. If you are sort of a serious fan of a major league team, do you also root for their farm team? I mean, you could. I think I probably cared about the Tides when I was a Met fan. I probably cared, you know, just sort of more in the terms of the players than their place in the standings. I would have rooted for the Bisons growing up here, and they wouldn't always have played, but yeah, I like that, though. If you are a serious fan of a major league team, do you also, does that extend to AAA? Does it all go all the way down? Like, just root for all those teams? Maybe. There probably are people who get into it like that. Sal will join me at 5. This is Mike Shope on WGR. Contest time. Caller 5 wins. 716-221-4WGR, 4947. What does caller 5 win? A pair of tickets to see Tom Segura at KeyBank Center September 27th, courtesy of Live Nation. Tickets are available now at Ticketmaster.com. No Bulldog today. How cool is it to be a Bonna fan today? Adrian Wojnarowski leaves big basketball media, sports media. The guy was like arguably like a Mount Rushmore for scoops in all sports. Woj bombs. He gives it up to become the general manager of the basketball program at his alma mater, St. Bonaventure. I didn't know college basketball programs had GMs, but maybe they always have. Maybe they do now in the changing world with NIL and just all the transfers and everything else. I've never even spoken with him, I don't think. When I was dabbling with ESPN, he might have been at Yahoo or if he was even working there yet. So I don't think he and I have ever had a conversation, but without even knowing him. And if it wasn't Bonna and it was Oregon State, this is the same to me. I just love the story of a guy, anybody, turning down the money. He wrote it beautifully, like why he decided to do this. Just, it's a life change. And that takes a lot of courage. I mean, he was already making, I saw, like $7 million a year. He's probably okay, and he's going to get paid here for this job, so I don't want to make it too much out of it. But it just puts a smile on my face to think about that. You know, somebody who, whether it's an athlete, reporter, almost anybody, you know, they're kind of all set. I think with that job, I mean, I make fun of guys like Schefter all the time because, not that this is Wojnarowski, but, you know, it's just sort of shady. Like, they're just giving stuff, and I don't know how much of it is real reporting. They're going to tell you what the league and the teams and the agents want you to know, and there's going to be a line drawn. That's how it is. I mean, I'm fairly cynical about that stuff, so, well, okay. So even if that's the case with him, and, or even if it isn't, and he decides, you know what, I don't really like this anymore enough to keep doing it. That's just bravo. good for him. Good for anybody else who can sort of turn down that kind of paycheck. He was owed $20 million over 3 years that he's turning down to go to Bonaventure. Got to be cool to be a fan of that team and just to have this kind of clout today. We'll see if he's good at it, but that it's a great day for them. Sal Capaccio after sports. This is Mike Shope on WGR.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy day beds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.